Under the Helmet.
You do your thing, all right? Don't be nervous, okay?
The show that looks at long-term player value in fantasy football.
It's the moment right here. We're going to have to decide what type of team we want to be.
Building dynasties each and every week.
I don't even know your name. What's your name?
Chad Parsons.
I'm telling you, man, you're leading the league in hydration.
I got a dynasty team reaping rewards for the next decade.
Find written and premium audio content at uthdynasty.com.
Playing it safe in Dynasty means you're going to lose.
Stop talking about it, man. Let's get this going right now.
Welcome to Under the Helmet. I am Chad Parsons, Dynasty feature show here, and got a special guest, Tim Torch. He is back this week, periodic co-host here. Great to have him aboard. You can listen to him on patreon.com/UTH. It does a lot of premium stuff over there with me on a regular basis, and good to mix him in here as well. We've got a special edition because things are on the move after NFL free agency, barreling towards the NFL draft, and thought we should go with some landing spots now that we have things filling with veterans, maybe uninspiringly so or excitingly so. So Tim Torch and I, we're going to go through our best landing spots at each skill position, but also the sneaky landing spots. You know, where do we think might be an underrated spot for someone to land and might find some value for us in rookie drafts as well. So, Tim, as always, I always like to give you first crack here, just in case we double up. But what do you think is the best landing spot for a quarterback to land, whether it's a remaining veteran or someone in the draft?
Yeah, I did want to keep it kind of sneaky. I think everyone should know the obvious landing spots. And I think it's important to remember that the people are picking at the top of the draft for a reason. But my first sneaky landing spot for me for quarterback is the New Orleans Saints. We saw the Derek Carr experience last year, and obviously that contract is one the Saints aren't going to move on from quickly. However, I just have flashbacks to what last season was, and there were moments when Jameis Winston stepped in that you finally saw, like, Chris Olave unlocked. You saw just the skill position pieces around that offense start to be optimized and really, really take advantage of the space like Sean Payton used to. And I don't know if it's the injuries with Derek Carr that they've just mounted up over the years or what exactly has happened to erode him to this point from where he was at one point where he was actually in the MVP conversation. But he's a long way from that. And he's just dealt with injuries the last few years. Whether he's actually missed multiple games or not in a row, he's at least had the questionable mark where you thought something would happen. And the position pieces there, they're still one of the teams I could see adding another wide receiver to go next to Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, and then the pass catchers with at the tight end position of Juwan Johnson, Foster Moreau, Taysom Hill, whatever that looks like for the rest of their pass catchers. But yeah, quarterback with the New Orleans Saints is just somewhere I could see something happening.
Free Chris Olave. it's kind of what we're waiting on. Yeah, I mean, all the optimism for his career start on an efficiency basis. And at some point, you need to pile it up. You don't want a guy that we certainly think could put it all together for some elite season run. I'll start off with a sneaky spot here for the quarterback position. I'm going to go with the 49ers. You know, this is a spot that, hey, Sam Darnold was brought in, didn't really get an opportunity. He goes, makes potentially $10 million there with the Vikings, and still has some luster to him. And I think this is a spot they brought in Josh Dobbs. You know, we kind of know what he is at this point. You know, he's someone that runs really hot, really cold. I would call him a homeless version of Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, someone that can be a dynamo, but not someone that I don't even know if the 49ers can scrub him up and make him play within structure to a high degree. So Brock Purdy, the decision-making time for his contract is coming up next offseason. What if there's an injury? Obviously, it's a situation that could bring out the best in a quarterback. So that would be a spot that, again, I think it's going to be more round two, round three. Could that be a Spencer Rattler stop? Could that be, you know, a Michael Pratt or someone like that? So I think there's there's some outlets here to say the 49ers grab another young player to develop. And who's to say that they have to pay Brock Purdy, you know, $40+ million with a massive contract next offseason, depending on how the season goes. And we just keep kind of going in this vein. And the 49ers obviously have elite pieces around that quarterback to make them successful. Tim, what did you think about the best landing spot?
Sorry, I started with my best landing spot. Yeah, that was the Saints.
Oh, okay. So sneaky, where are you headed with sneaky?
So for sneaky with me, I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Bucks. I'm not overcompensating for Baker Mayfield. I promise. I'm not overcompensating for Baker Mayfield. I think the Buccaneers, if they were wise, would look at the situation that's happened in Seattle, the situation that's happened with the New York Giants, and say, we may have made this mid-level quarterback investment, but we can't just look at previous bad production and say that could never happen again, or that situation's never going to happen again. And the number of weapons that are still sitting on that team are fantastic. The idea that a rookie quarterback could go into a situation with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, a decent enough offensive line. Granted, the offensive coordinator has changed, but Rashad White, Trey Palmer is not exactly a slouch. I thought Cade Otton showed enough last year to, hey, it works enough. Whereas if a rookie guy came into this situation, boy, I would at least look twice, and especially in rookie drafts, I would not just turn up my nose to a rookie quarterback landing on this depth chart and saying Baker Mayfield 100% is not going to have any more hiccups. Baker Mayfield is the guy, and absolutely there's zero question about him going into the future. We can't just look at what happened his last year in Cleveland. Granted, he had a shoulder injury, or the situation when he went to the Panthers, the Rams, bounced all over, and then finally landed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We can't just look past that, what his track record has been. So yeah, a sneaky landing spot. I don't think people are willing to quite accept like the Baker Mayfield downturn, but boy, if a rookie quarterback just steps in there, kind of takes over for the Kyle Trask's failed experiment, I would love to see that. I would love to see what happens.
Yeah, I keep putting Bo Nix in the late first to them.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know, do you think Nix and Penix are the two that are most likely to slip and get to the 20s, maybe get to the second round?
It would be perfect if Spencer Rattler ended up there, because so many people are like, oh, Spencer Rattler's kind of like Baker Mayfield.
Right. Yeah. And Baker Mayfield, he's on a tweener contract. So to say that they're all in, they're not all in. They're 1 foot in, 1 foot out, 1 foot out, do the hokey pokey. And we're going to keep, we'll get things straight at the running back position, but I'll finish out and go crisscross applesauce. Best Minnesota landing spot there is the Vikings there. I mean, you look at, are they going to be active moving up? They got that extra first round pick. It seems like they're moving up, and it seems like they're moving up for a quarterback. Now, how high? But this is a spot, and there's a lot of tea leaves that, you know, people are just imagining, drooling, that it could be Drake May, you know, that wherever they're moving up to, could it be for Drake May? And we're going to hear, other than the Bears, we're probably going to hear every single combination for Washington, New England, the Vikings trading up to what spot and for what quarterback is left, all these iterations. But if you tell me a rookie quarterback is going to Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, and Aaron Jones, I don't think that there's a better landing spot out there to be, you know, and in a conducive system to make you look good, you know, that made us believe in Joshua Dobbs for a little stretch. You know, so I just think that this is one that at least getting you off on the right foot. We'll see if Aaron Jones is still there, Hockenson back by midseason, but the fact that he has two cornerstone wide receivers and an additional accoutrement. I mean, I think this is awesome for the Vikings quarterback. If that's JJ McCarthy, if it's Drake May, whoever it ends up being with that trade up, This would be an ideal one for that rookie quarterback to get started. What do you think about the running back position? Best spot in terms of maybe early opportunity being fostered into a successful environment?
There's so many. there's so many, but I think the obvious pick here should be the Los Angeles Chargers. And the reason I like this situation so much, you have for at least the time being, you have a stable quarterback. Gus Edwards, it's so weird how the NFL is like falling over itself for Gus Edwards, but I think there's still plenty of opportunity there. As far as pass catchers, there's not really a ton of concern from Josh Palmer, Quentin Johnson, Will Disley, and the offensive line is okay enough. There's some stable pieces there. And we all know the Greg Roman, Harbaugh experience where they want to run the ball, they want to pound it 50 times a game. So there's plenty of opportunity here, even if you're going to say Gus Edwards kind of bats lead off for the start of the season. I'm really interested to see where they go with the running back position, because I think this is definitely a prime spot for something quality to happen.
Absolutely. You know, a team that is just positioning themselves to run the ball, take the air out of it. And, you know, we'll see. Everyone wants them, clamoring for them to take a wide receiver at five. They might trade back. They might end up passing on wide receiver once or twice to start this draft. But yeah, Gus Edwards, older, power back, and getting in that nuzzled number two or 1B position where there might be 200 touches for the number two back, even without Gus Edwards' injury, certainly a good spot. You kind of rope-a-dope me. I thought you were going to go, you know, and say, you said, ooh, it's an easy answer. I thought you were going to take mine. I took the Dallas Cowboys. I rarely see a mock draft where if it's multiple rounds and you kind of go, and one of the most interesting things that's going to shift rookie drafts is scrolling right to 56, because 56 is that spot, you know, right in that zone where you expect the first running back, to go off the board, and Dallas is wide open. I love Rico Dowdle. They brought him back, but they brought him back probably to be the number two back. And it just makes a little too much sense that they bring in Jonathan Brooks. If he didn't have the ACL recovery he was going through, I don't even think he would be there at 56. Could it be Trey Benson? Could it be Blake Corum? Think about the fantasy stakes involved for whatever running back goes to Dallas, especially if it's with the round two pedigree. I think it'll lose a little bit of something if he goes round three, but he'll still have the ideal landing spot and a full-fledged opportunity as a rookie to be one of those dynamos. I just remember when Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he got round one pedigree, but the excitement about him going to Kansas City, every once in a while, there is a landing spot that folks get genuinely excited about. And I don't think there's a ton of wide open opportunities, but Dallas is absolutely wide open, cavernous in terms of what could be in front of the rookie with their initial year of touches. What do you think is a sneaky spot for running backs that might not get a lot of love the first time you glance at it or the first time they land there in post-draft analysis, but the more you chew on it, people will warm up to it and see the value?
I honestly don't know if people are going to warm up to it and be happy about it or even acknowledge it. But I do want to go with Kyren Williams. The Los Angeles Rams and the Kyren Williams experience that seems to be flooding X, formerly Twitter. And the reason I'm going this direction, and we talk about this so often, is we look at the quality of the players that are sitting behind the starter. Ronnie Rivers, Royce Freeman, Zach Evans, Miles Gaskin. Are you telling me that as a head coach, you would sit back and look at this depth chart and say, I don't need another quality piece. I don't need something there that can add. I mean, they've done very little besides bring back Ronnie Rivers. So for me to sit here and say, and look at the other ways they've addressed their needs, whether you like it or not, they did bring in Carson Wentz and Carson Wentz and Jimmy Garoppolo as backup quarterbacks. They have, we all know about Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua as quality wide receivers, Tyler Higbee, and they did not really cheap out on Colby Parkinson contract either, and they still have a few other guys in the pipeline. And boy, did they just invest in guards along their offensive line. So this team is already telling us they want to be able to run the ball. They want to be more physical. Do they have enough talent on that depth chart to really say they are going to run the ball that much? I don't believe they do. And by acknowledging that, I'm willing to say that there's likely going to be a decent pedigreed running back added to this roster, and I'm here for it. I know a lot of people won't be, but I'm still going to be sitting here saying he's one of those guys that could be Trey Mason very easily.
Hurting my Ronnie Rivers soul, Tim. I love Ronnie Rivers. It seems like I've been talking about it for 2 years. He's yet to really get an opportunity. He did the classic, I think it was Alexander Mattison, those early years with Dalvin Cook. There was like a time when Dalvin Cook went down, and it was the same time Alexander Mattison was out. And I think that's what happened to Ronnie Rivers. Ronnie Rivers got Mattison with his injury aligning with the starter's injury. But that makes a lot of sense, like you said. I mean, is Ronnie Rivers going to really inhibit them from making a move? Because you look at running back three, and it's a relative black hole. And they have an extra pick in the top 100. So I think it's a prime spot, round two or one of those round three picks that the Rams could certainly splash. And that would quake the Kieran Williams valuation, you know, and maybe confidence the next time he gets injured, or potentially just losing that job out pedigreed over the next 12 plus months there. That's a good one. I went with another spot where you might think you're safe, you know, with the starter. And I went with the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that Isaiah Pacheco, last year of his contract is looming, 2025 there, and he would be a 27-year-old free agent after that contract concludes. And let's remember, Jerick McKinnon, he's gone. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's gone. So they need a running back, period. So it's just a matter of, is it going to be some low-level veteran? Do they bring someone back? Because guess what? McKinnon's still out there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, still out there. Or are they going to recycle and get a start the clock over with a rookie where Pacheco has not cost much, no minimal investment there. And you figure, you know, they're going to be the complicated factor is, you know, are they going to look at running back two in the first three, four, five rounds versus maybe bringing in a couple of wide receivers? Could they maybe get a tight end? I mean, they have a lot of options, and they usually like to draft defense, you know, keep that turn. They traded away Legarius Sneed when he was going to cost a lot. So you've got to keep supplementing if you're not going to pay the big contracts. So it gets a little murky. You know, they don't have any extra picks in the first three rounds. But I do think it's a sneaky spot to say, this is someone that can win the number two job. It's on a strong offense. Pacheco runs so hard that he's a risk every single play to just drop a shoulder, and he's going to be out for the rest of the game or the next week. And we're talking about Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes offense. So I think all of that makes it, you know, not someone potentially that's going to challenge for the lead job, but man, I mean, they've taken a few shots to Eric Prince and others, and just, it hasn't really worked out. And if they draft in a class that's deep, they could draft someone in round five and get someone fully functional and someone legitimately within 6 months of their drafting we're absolutely excited about on the dynasty front.
Go ahead. This is just a team that overall, when I watch like where they're putting money, they're always shopping from the bargain bin. It's never like a big thing in free agency. They really want the cheap talent. They want the rookie contracts. They want to be cost controlled in every way, shape, or form. The idea of them reaching on a aging running back is not something I see this team doing in their build, especially with the contract Patrick Mahomes has. Yeah, that makes so much sense to me for them to get someone, and it could be earlier than we were willing to admit to ourselves. Even to add year one, just something extra to the offense, because Pacheco is a bruiser. He is a dump truck just trying to go through and bully people. But as we've seen so often, that only lasts for so long. Are they looking to expand into something extra out of the backfield?
Yeah, someone I watched in depth after the combine, it wasn't really on my radar much at all, was Isaac Garrido, the guy that blazed the 4.3s and kind of
Yeah.
popped up on the radar at 220 plus pounds in a Pacheco sort of fashion. And I watched his tape, and he was pretty fluid and honestly more comfortable as a receiver than a pure runner. But you give him a lane, and think about all those light boxes that Kansas City can induce, that we're going to make you dink and dunk. We're going to make you dump it down. And Garrido, I think, in the screen game, and you get that speed with a lane, and that's going to be, his best absolute trait, and someone that's probably not more than around 5, 6, 7 pick. So that's just someone that when I was watching him, I was like, this could be a fit for an ancillary guy in the Chiefs offense just to see where he goes with this. What do you think about the wide receiver position? What's the best landing spot left?
So when I look at the wide receiver position, I look at one of two things, like the quality of the quarterback that's sitting there. Is he someone who can do anything of note? And then where are there open targets? I don't really like the vacated targets because I do believe targets are earned. But is there something there? Are there other quality pass catchers on the roster? I don't think it gets too much better than the Arizona Cardinals. There's a great reason why everyone keeps putting Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, all of these top flight guys to the Cardinals. It's because who's going to be their one and two starting wide receivers right now? Michael Wilson and Chris Moore. This team could walk away from the draft with two or three wide receivers, and I don't think that would be a wrong way of looking at it. Even if you want to say that Trey McBride takes away some of those targets and some of the quality upside that can happen, there's plenty. Look, even out of the backfield, if you're going to say that James Conner is going to stay healthy for a decent chunk of the season, which is not really his track record. It's not going to be any type of large target vacuum between James Conner and Trey McBride. So the Cardinals with Kyler Murray, I think they are primed for some type of young wide receiver infusion. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're a team that double dips.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was my choice. Good enough quarterback, and they're competing with Michael Wilson and what? I mean, this is it's really it's going to be Trey McBride and this wide receiver that is brought in. They have extra picks. I mean, if they were to trade, if they do pass on Marvin Harrison Jr. in some capacity, they've got 27, they've got 35 in prime spots to get, one of the top 6, 7 wide receivers. They've got more, I think, in line with what you're saying, which is multiple wide receivers in the top 100. They've got 6 picks. Why not take a couple? They shipped out Rondale Moore, so they've got a lot of holes to fill there. And Kyler Murray, a good enough passer, but just the intrigue of, them getting Marvin Harrison Jr. and what those targets could be in year one, is pretty tantalizing from the career start perspective. I'll start out since pretty much doubled up there. The sneaky wide receiver landing spot for me is the Giants. I think that I'm a little more bullish on Drew Lock. How many starts does he get this year with Daniel Jones not so much insulated with his starting opportunities? The Giants pretty much need everything. Darren Waller with retirement gate, is he in? Is he out? If you're mentally halfway out, I mean, you're kind of all the way out. So I still expect him to probably not play this year, Darren Waller, and be retired. The wide receivers, what are they competing with? You have Darius Slayton, Jalin Hyatt, Wan'Dale Robinson. If they bring in, say, Malik Nabers at 6, I mean, this is a huge spot to be an absolute dominant force right away with it, if you get good enough quarterback play. And if Daniel Jones doesn't supply it, I think they're going to turn the page to and give Drew Lock a decent chunk of starts independent of injury here for the Giants this year.
Yeah, for sneaky one, I don't know how sneaky this is, but there has been significant investment through free agency, both in prior years and current year, with the Jacksonville Jaguars for Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, Zaja. There's money they have expended at that position, significant money, but to say that they have adequately surrounded Trevor Lawrence with the weapons he needs to be successful would be a incorrect statement. And I really hope they do something. I did hear the tra- I guess we should even comment that I should even comment that they did look to possibly do something. There was rumors that it was Zay Jones, the number 17 pick for Brandon Ayuk. So even though that's kind of someone's rumor mill trying to get someone's something started, I do think there is a little bit of smoke to the idea of this pass catching group for Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars isn't done. And we shouldn't just look away if they add someone with decent draft capital, especially as much as we'd like to talk about this wide receiver class. I mean, we may be looking at someone of note, or this could easily be a team that trades up to get somewhere in the top 10 possibly for one of these wide receivers. So just a really interesting landing spot. I don't think it's as obvious as so many others because they do have Kirk, Gabe Davis, Zay Jones, and of course Evan Ingram. But yeah, that would be such a great place for a young wide receiver to land.
I keep thinking Xavier Worthy's going there in the mid first his rising, rising intrigue. I just don't think he makes it to the end of the round with all those, you know, Buffalo and Kansas City type landing spots. I think he's going to be gone before we get there. And he just kind of offers something different than all those other guys, which be good news for Trevor Lawrence. Something that, you know, a friend of ours, Jordan McNamara, has kind of mentioned. He's like, you know, is Trevor Lawrence underrated right now? You know, are they going to go after and headhunt a weapon, you know, and all, and whether it comes to fruition with production or not, I mean, in May and June could have a different outlook for his upside than he does today.
I just want to make a comment. I'm really excited to hear what your experience is like after day one and probably day two of the draft this year, because the number of offensive skill position players that are expected to go.
I'm going to be a wrung out bar towel for folks from last year. I do a little, you know, it could be 3 minutes, it could be 5 minutes, it could be 10 minutes, depending on the guy, but yeah, pretty much live fire. I'll put out individual shows on players like an audio book. And I did that for free agency, but obviously that's a little more spread out than over the course of 3-4 hours of a draft. But yeah, it's going to be a busy one. Lean times for free time during the draft for me.
Yeah.
All right. Moving to the tight end position, best landing spot. And I went with the Chargers. I think this is a team that we could see. You know, one thing that I didn't get at the very beginning of the draft process, everyone put wide receiver to the Chargers. And I was like, why? And we saw some, but I was like, why not Brock Bowers? You know, like, why would he not be potentially considered one of the best fits for them to add a weapon to this offense? And this is one where they signed Will Dissly, maybe more of a blocker. They've got questions at wide receiver. If they were to put in Brock Bowers into this offense, I just get, or just again, a tight end in general, I think this is one that could be really exciting because you have that equation. And I've said before, historically, the Rob Gronkowski, what did he have generally? He had a lackluster wide receiver one, and he had a strong quarterback. George Kittle had that for a strong section. Travis Kelce had that for a section. And I think that is the equation for ultimate upside if you were to draw it up in a lab. And you can obviously still do well with a number one wide receiver, a strong one, plus the tight end, you know, being those two guys that monopolize the offense. But you would love to have it where it's a weaker wide receiver one and a strong quarterback. And you would potentially have that in spades here with the Chargers as this best landing spot on my board.
Great one. I like that one a lot. That was definitely one I considered when I was kind of going over my options. The best one for me that I think it's just kind of plug and play. It almost makes too much sense. It's the Denver Broncos for me. And they're currently at a point where Jerry Jeudy's gone. So right now they have Courtland Sutton and it's question marks. Now I do want to recognize that the people do have varying degrees of excitement about the Marvin Mims of it all. But I'm not willing to sit here and say Marvin Mims is just going to step in and be the optimized pass catcher that everyone really thinks he is based off of a small sample size. So I think Brock Bowers landing possibly in this situation, if they're the team that gets left out of the QB hunt, if they're the ones that's not able to make the big trade up like everyone wants to say, there's the group of teams that that supposedly are willing to make the big move. They would be the one that I feel like is the least likely to possibly make that move up. And I could be wrong about that. But if they're not, I think they could easily be looking to continue manicuring their situation so that it's really great, a great setup for moving into 2025.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, Denver's another one where you say, is there a wide receiver, you know, that's going to take away from a tight end potentially dominating in that offense? And I think those are good ones to always keep in mind at tight end, where, you know, Sam LaPorta, you know, he just ended up emerging and he's right there with Amon-Ra St. Brown, feature element of that offense. And that's the secondary one you would like to look for. But if you have one where wide receiver is pretty weak, man, you know, that is one you can exploit and rise up pretty quickly there. We'll see if Broncos, you know, what they do at 12 is critical. They might get a look at Brock Bowers plus a quarterback they may or may not like, which is going to be an interesting thing to watch there at number 12 for them. Last one here for me is going to be a sneaky landing spot for the tight end position. I went with the Washington Commanders. They have Terry McLaurin, who is kind of leveled off. Again, good NFL wide receiver fantasy-wise. Upside has been rather limited. What has been the quarterback situation? Not great, but Logan Thomas gone. Zach Ertz, one-year bridge guy. Jahan Dotson moving towards maybe a bus track in year two after some promise in year one. You have Austin Eckler as a short-term guy and a new quarterback coming in fresh off the 102 selection here, most likely there for Washington, which could be good, could be bad, but it offers promise. So I think this is one where you could say a role relatively early. Do we think Ertz is going to stay healthy? But things could clear out wide open by 2027 and you get your evolving quarterback and boom, you get a big time ceiling there for Washington, who they also have a bushel basket like Arizona of selections. We could see tight end two go to them, maybe at 40 overall. Maybe it's tight end two in the 60s. And certainly you could look at maybe tight end three or so late in the third round where they also have more selections.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Was that your selection?
It wasn't. I almost feel bad doing this because I whenever I say sneaky, I almost feel like it can be considered a hot take. And I never mean for these picks to be considered a hot take, but I think people are just gonna hate it either way. The Chiefs for me are the perfect selection for a tight end of some level of quality to be taken in the NFL draft. We are at a point now. I'm asking everyone who's listening to this to rewind their minds a little bit and to go back to the playoff run where it almost seemed like they bubble wrapped Travis Kelce for most of the regular season, just took him out of bubble wrap in order to either win games or emergency situation, emergency break glass type of situations. I don't think that's going to work every season for the Kansas City Chiefs. I know we've mentioned them a couple of times. We also mentioned them in the running back part, but they're due for an infusion of more talent in multiple positions. We saw them bring in Hollywood Brown. I would still argue that they're a great spot for a wide receiver as well. But they need an infusion of talent. We can't just sit here and say Travis Kelce can keep being put in bubble wrap. We need to start looking to the future with a lot of these players. And I think one more really interesting part, which is like the Travis Kelce of it all, is that he's only a couple of years behind his brother. To say anyone is the next Tony Gonzalez or insert prolific tight end name, even to say he's like Jason Witten being able to play as late as he did, I don't think we can say those words. And I'm just ready to see Kansas City look to maybe not completely get to the next chapter, but it's one of those cases where you just see the next chapter coming in a few pages.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you that Noah Gray hasn't done enough to really consider him the heir apparent. I do think they're in a precarious spot when you look at where their picks are, that maybe next year is going to look a little better for them to grab the heir apparent. 32 is going to be beyond Bowers. It's probably going to be a little bit of a reach if they go Jatavion Sanders. Sanders might be gone by 64. Late round three, I mean, yes, they could get Theo Johnson or Ben Sinnott or someone like that. So they will have options throughout those earlier rounds. But Noah Gray, you know, when you just look at some of the things on a per route basis and the fact that he just has not shown enough of that starting level upside, you know, that you would want to see from maybe, you know, you've seen from Isaiah Likely or some of these other options that maybe aren't true starters today, but you could see them as Martellus Bennett types, you know, down the line where they move on at some point and get a starting job. We haven't seen that from Noah Gray. So like you said, weapons, and if that's wide receiver, if that's tight end, anything helps. And we know the Chiefs like to play multiple tight end sets as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right. That's going to do it this week. Talking our best and sneaky landing spots at the skill positions. Tim Torch, great to have him on the weekly show this week. You can find him on Twitter at It's Tim Torch. He does a lot of Dynasty redraft, team management, draft help. So we're going to be coming up to the summer months. You're going to hear that again here on the weekly show as we get much closer. But his calendar fills up, so certainly reach out to him if you're interested in that consultation and that hands-on type assistance, because you get to August. And he doesn't have many spots left as you lead up to week one for your office league or anything you have going on dynasty or redraft wise. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Parsons NFL. As mentioned, we both record stuff on a regular basis over at patreon.com/UTH. And you get a free copy of the draft guide if you sign up as an all pro tier. It's great. You get a month of access to all the content that's over there with premium shows. You're also going to get the free copy of the pre-draft and post-draft draft guide. As I mentioned, hard at work. It's going to be out probably in the next 6 to 7 days, mostly done with it. I got to keep refining and adding more charts and data to already this concise guide that's going to give you everything you need to dominate your startup and rookie drafts and essentially just your rookie evals and valuations for your dynasty leagues this 2024 draft cycle. So never been a better time to try out the VIP chat and all the content that comes with that all pro membership over at patreon.com/UTH. So for Tim Torch, myself, Chad Parsons, until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.